presented by the National Association of Realtors.
Hey, good morning. I'm Playbook co-author Eugene Daniels. Somehow, it is already Friday, April 12th. Here is what's driving the day. First up this morning, Vice President Kamala Harris is headed to Arizona. She'll be doing a campaign event focused on abortion rights and access. The event is being put on by the campaign, which is a bit of a different tack that Harris is taking when it comes to her abortion rights and reproductive rights events. The new strategy allows Harris to go after former President Donald Trump by name over and over and over again at these campaign-style abortion events. Multiple aides tell us that for weeks, Harris has been worried that Trump was going to try and moderate his position publicly. So she sees it as her responsibility to keep Trump from attempting to shake off any of the blowback from some of the draconian laws being enacted in states across the country. Thus, the new strategy. Here's just a taste of what she is expected to say today. Quote, "We all must understand who is to blame. It is the former president, Donald Trump. It is Donald Trump who, during his campaign in 2016, said women should be punished for seeking an abortion. Donald Trump is the architect of this healthcare crisis, and that's not a fact he hides. In fact, he brags about it. And as much harm as he has already caused, a second Trump term would be even worse. If Donald Trump gets the chance, he will sign a national abortion ban. How do we know? Look at his record. Congress tried to pass a national abortion ban before, in 2017, and then President Trump endorsed it." At the heart of this shift is the campaign and Harris's concern that Trump's attempt to moderate his position is actually going to work. As one Harris aide put it to me, we'd be crazy not to be worried about that. Also, you are not going to want to miss this week's Playbook Deep Dive. Michael Cohen, star witness in next week's Trump hush money trial, takes you inside the first and probably only criminal trial that Trump is going to face before the election. My boy Ryan and Michael Cohen get into some really juicy bits about how he's going to defend the assault on his credibility that will surely come from Trump's legal team, why District Attorney Alvin Bragg's case is stronger than some analysts may believe, and the legal tactics he is expecting from Trump's team, and whether he ever regrets breaking with Trump. And joining me now to talk more about that case and his new story is legal editor James Ramoser. James, good morning.
Hello, Eugene. Good morning.
Now, you wrote about the two-tier justice system that President Trump is always talking about, with a twist, as it were. And you start writing this. A firebrand politician named Donald is about to stand trial. Just a few days before jury selection, he goes on TV to slam the charges as baseless and biased. Quote, "The FBI and the Justice Department," he insists, "have targeted their political opponents in a burst of partisan prosecution." Now, for those listening, they're probably like, yeah, I know who the hell that is. That's Donald J. Trump. But it's not. It's a man named Don Hill in Dallas. He was a city council member and faced bribery charges 15 years ago. Now, talk about why you started with that.
So I've been working on this story for a while about how Donald Trump has, in many ways, both small and large, sort of been given special treatment as he's faced his numerous criminal and civil trials over the past year. And in my research, I happened to come across this case, like you said, involving this guy named Don Hill, a Democratic politician in Dallas who was also going on trial and also used the eve of his trial to attack the charges as politically biased and used some of the same political rhetoric that we're used to hearing from Trump, even though this was actually 15 years ago in 2009. And then I looked at what happened to this guy, Don Hill. And what happened is that he immediately got sanctioned for criminal contempt. He got a 30-day jail sentence for violating a gag order. And I was really struck by how different the treatment was of this high-profile politician, at least in his city, who accused the prosecution of political bias, and how much more leeway Trump has gotten. And so that allowed me to start looking at, you know, other comparators. And what I found by talking to a lot of lawyers is that Trump really is one of a kind.
I've heard this from experts before, that Trump, when he says there's a two-tiered justice system, that it's on him. They're talking that, that really he should be, you know, it's that thing where, like, when you're pointing one finger, all those other fingers are pointing at yourself, or whatever the thing that grandma say. But when you talk to these experts, are they worried about the precedent this sets at all? Or is, does this feel like a uniquely Trump phenomenon that he's able to get away with the things you just outlined?
I think that it is uniquely Trumpian, just in the sense that he's a former president, he's a current presidential candidate, he's the only one who's been in those positions who's ever faced four criminal indictments and a slew of civil trials, all while he's running for the highest office in the country. And I think it's unlikely that that set of situations would ever align again.
Never say never, James. Never, never say never. I mean,
I mean, 2028 if Trump loses, you know.
Exactly. Who knows?
But, like, I think the reason that Trump has posed such a stress test for the legal system is because the legal system is not really designed to deal with what we're facing, to deal with a former president who's under indictment, who's simultaneously running to resume the same office that he once held. And judges don't know how to handle it. The system isn't set up to handle it.
What does it say about our legal system that judges are so worried, it seems, about the political blowback of holding a person who is a citizen of the country and therefore is supposed to abide by the laws of the legal system, that they're not willing to do that, that they're so nervous? What does it say about our legal system? Are they, like, I guess, why are they so nervous about this? Are they worried about their safety? Are they worried about their families?
One hypothesis that I have is that many of Trump's judges really are trying their best to run these cases with as much neutrality as possible and run these cases without treating Trump any differently from any other defendant. And what that means in the eyes of these judges is trying to lower the temperature around these cases and trying not to inflame the atmosphere both in and out of the courtroom. And of course, Trump, with all his rhetoric, makes that very difficult. But I think that they're aware that if they really threw the book at him, if they, for example, tried to throw him in pretrial detention for, you know, attacking prosecutors or attacking judges,
or witnesses,
or intimidating witnesses, as he's often done, if they did that, yes, that might amount to sort of an equal treatment because that's what they would do with other defendants. But it would, in a sense, be counterproductive because it would not lower the temperature around the case. It would, of course, inflame the case even further, even more than it already is, because Trump would immediately become a martyr. His supporters would see him as being an even graver victim of persecution, and it would not have the effect that the judges are looking for.
Really quickly before I let you go, we have jury selection on Monday. Do we have any sense of how long that could take? I guess, when do you think this thing could actually get started? When am I going to hear somebody say, I object?
Well, I think you're going to hear lawyers say they object immediately to different portions of the jury selection process. How long could jury selection take? I mean, sometimes it can be as quick as a day or two in some of Trump's civil cases. It's actually gone pretty quickly, I think a couple days in one of the civil cases where there was a jury. But as you point out, it's more likely, I think, to drag out a little longer than that. Spoiler alert, the legal team here at Politico has a story coming pretty soon about that jury selection process and the challenges that the lawyers on both sides will face in trying to pick an impartial jury for a defendant whom everyone in America has strong opinions about, it seems.
And we will have to look forward to that story. We love a drop on here. Thank you very much for that. Go get some rest because you're going to have a very long few weeks.
Thanks, Eugene. Talk to you soon.
And for your schedule today, the House is in and the Senate is out. In the afternoon, President Biden will be delivering virtual remarks at the National Action Network Convention before traveling to Rehoboth Beach for the weekend. The music in today's show was composed by the mysterious Breakmaster Cylinder. Callan Tansel-Suddeth is our podcast producer, and Iris is our managing producer. Mike DeBonis and Zach Stanton are our fearless editors. I'm Eugene Daniels. Thanks for listening.
We believe fairness is worth fighting for, and we won't stop until we have fair housing for all. That's why the National Association of Realtors supports congressional initiatives to improve fair housing in America. From down payment assistance to alternative credit scoring, from providing cutting-edge training to take our members' knowledge to the next level, we stand by lawmakers so we can stand by homebuyers even better and fairer.